You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Deanna Lee.
And I'm Evan Banks. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's August 2nd.
It has been more than 4 years since COVID-19 forced U.S. schools to suspend in-person instruction. But students still have a long way to go to recover from academic setbacks related to the pandemic. What are school districts doing to address this? Results from a new RAND survey show that districts nationwide continue to take a wide range of approaches to recover learning losses. Social and emotional learning instruction top the list of ways districts are supporting students. 83% of districts also added staff in the 2023 to 2024 school year to assist with students' academic recovery. And many districts are adding instruction time. 56% expanded summer learning, and 47% expanded after-school enrichment programming. However, only 6% of districts added academic instructional minutes during the school day, and only 3% expanded the school day or year. Other approaches include in-person and online tutoring, credit recovery courses, diagnostic or benchmark assessments, and additional hands-on learning. Importantly, the federal aid that is supporting many of these interventions is set to expire in September. This is a concern for many district leaders we surveyed. A quarter of districts anticipated revenue drops in the next two school years, and 4 in 10 high-poverty districts expected cuts in the coming school year. Reducing teachers was the most common budget cut anticipated by districts. Notably, districts do not plan to cut back on devices. In fact, 97% of districts we surveyed plan to continue providing computing devices for students into the next school year. These findings provide valuable insights into the state of K-12 education and will be useful to district leaders and policymakers as pandemic recovery efforts continue.
New START is the last remaining major bilateral strategic arms control treaty between the United States and Russia. It was a very significant treaty, reducing both sides' deployed strategic warheads by one-third compared with previously agreed ceilings, and introducing a number of important innovations. But there were also issues it did not address, and since Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, the agreement has essentially collapsed. With the treaty officially expiring in February 2026 and an unprecedentedly hostile U.S.-Russia relationship, what, if anything, should replace New START? A new RAND paper tackles this question, outlining objectives the United States could seek to achieve through a new arrangement with Russia. The authors focus on 4 key goals: ensuring first strike or crisis stability, avoiding a new arms race with Russia, using arms control to promote U.S. military advantages and compensate for disadvantages, and enhancing the security of U.S. allies. They also highlight ways the U.S. might realize these objectives. For example, by pursuing another treaty similar to New START, or through political commitments and informal arrangements. Finally, the paper lays out a number of scenarios that show how Russia's actions between now and 2026 could affect U.S. strategy. The best-case scenario is for Russia to return to New START implementation and compliance. However, that scenario seems unlikely. Even if the future of Russian arms control seems quite bleak now, the authors write, the United States does have options it can pursue that could advance core U.S. security interests.
In 2020, fewer Black Americans believed the false claims of widespread election and voter fraud than their white counterparts did. According to Ray Block Jr., RAND's inaugural Truth Decay chair, the Black community has, quote, developed a powerful sixth sense for separating fact from fiction. largely due to facing centuries of racism and disenfranchisement, and batting down endless so-called truths. During election season, disinformation is more prevalent than ever, and advances in artificial intelligence and technology are making it even easier to deceive voters who are seen as vulnerable. And so far, the response to disinformation has, for the most part, been ad hoc and uncoordinated. The U.S. government lacks a central authority and coherent strategy for dealing with falsehoods. When disinformation efforts succeed, the results can disproportionately harm racial and ethnic minority groups, and Black people in particular. That's why it's so meaningful that Black Americans are resilient in the face of fiction masquerading as truth. The potential damage is high. Block outlines a few key lessons from Black Americans' approach to finding the truth. First, conduct a reality check, Block says. If something sounds dubious, question it. Black Americans are known to possess a strong sense of shared fate, which is the notion that what happens to people who share an ethnic identity directly affects each individual in the group. This means that skepticism is a constant, and because Black Americans are often portrayed negatively in the media, they may be less likely than their white counterparts to believe falsehoods. Second, use tools to verify what's true. The National Black Cultural Information Trust and the Black Information Network have created digital tools to dispense accurate voting information and counter the outright lies that crop up. These resources fill a critical role by providing trusted spaces for people to connect and share ideas about how to verify what's true. Third, be active and empowered consumers. When you think, "This doesn't sound right," scrutinize and cross-check every so-called fact. To help, there are tools that can detect bot accounts on social media or track the spread of deliberate falsehoods. Fourth and finally, community matters. And perhaps most importantly, Block says, don't isolate yourself. Talk to your friends and family about what you see online or hear on the news. Even better, try to challenge your perspective by having these conversations with people beyond your peer networks and outside your comfort zone. The truth is still out there, Block reminds us. We all just have to work a little harder to find it.
Since the introduction of the first two-way radios, militaries have become increasingly dependent on the electromagnetic spectrum, or EMS, rather than physical cables for communications. But these technologies are costly and are often targeted and jammed by adversaries. That's why, as the war with Russia continues, Ukraine has been relying more on legacy communication techniques. According to Brand's Nicholas Johnson, this offers a modern-day case study of a fight for battlefield communication in an engagement between mismatched military powers. At the start of the 2022 Russian invasion of Ukraine, Russian forces used electronic warfare at all levels to target Ukrainian air defenses and radio communications. However, after Russia's previous aggression in 2014, Ukraine was ready for these tactics, so it shifted to historical methods including runners and dispatch drivers. Russia, on the other hand, suffered heavily from their own jamming, which impacted their ability to command the battlefield. Thus, Ukraine's efforts mitigated Russia's sizable electronic warfare advantage in the opening stage of the invasion. Johnson says that Ukraine should consider going further than it already has with more cost-effective traditional communication solutions. For example, a tactical hardwired network is another legacy technique that could be leveraged. These networks cannot be jammed by adversary interference and require physically tapping to intercept signals. Spiral-bound cables can be reeled out rapidly and have been utilized in previous conflicts to communicate over thousands of kilometers. What's more, modern vehicles such as cable trucks could further increase the speed of creating vast wired networks. Although wires can be physically cut by kinetic action, parallel paths can create redundancy. And in the worst case, as demonstrated in Ukraine, runners and drivers can be leveraged for the last tactical mile of communications. Such an approach shows how vintage systems can provide militaries with simpler and cheaper alternatives to keep critical lines of communication open.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We'll see you next week. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.